Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Business owners, call Brad Wallace and the Wallace Firm. Your insurance company may have written your policy, but they don't decide the law. For a free consultation and review of your policy to see if you are eligible for compensation or for lost revenue, 844-844-WINS or wallacewins.com. Proud partner of Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN.
Am I on my own? Am I on my own island here on this 1 through 16? I love the 1 through 16 idea. I think there's a lot of fans out there, and Dave McMenamin was talking about this too, where they feel like, well, it's going to take away from rivalries. It's going to take away, but I don't know. To be honest with you, what are the real rivalries right now in the NBA? I mean, are there that many crazy rivalries right now in the league? I don't feel like I could go down the list and say, oh man, Miami and New York. No, I was back in the 90s. Lakers and the Celtics. Yeah, there's a rivalry there, but it's not, you know, of anything that pertains to today. The Lakers and the Clippers, you feel like that's building into something. You know, you feel like by the time these two teams faced in the playoffs, they would have had obviously four cracks at it. Lakers and the Clippers, you felt, okay, these two teams are going to have to go through each other, but who's the Bucks rivalry? Who's that with? What are the real rivalries right now in the NBA? Where I felt this 1 through 16, man, such a unique time to kind of come up with some of these different matchups. Okay, so the thing I mentioned I want to hit on with Dave McMenamin, and Dave, nice enough to spend almost a half hour with us. So Damian Lillard gives his thoughts on if the NBA comes back and the Portland Trailblazers have no playoff spot. He spoke to Yahoo Sports, and it was with Chris Haynes. It was this morning, a phone call that they had. If we come back and they're just like, we're adding a few games to finish the regular season, and they're throwing us out there for meaningless games, and we don't have a true opportunity to get into the playoffs, I'm going to be with my team because I'm a part of the team, but I'm not going to be participating. I'm telling you that right now, and you could just put that in there. So, Dave, I think McMenamin, who is, you know, obviously spent an incredible amount of time in the league, I think the way he explained it, where Damian Lillard sees an opportunity right now. The opportunity that he sees is, let me see if I can campaign my way into having a shot at getting into this postseason. Let me see if I could find a way to convince or to make enough chatter and noise that the NBA starts considering, hey, we're not going to come in just with the eight teams in the East, the eight teams in the West. Let's give some of these teams that are right on the outside looking in an opportunity to have a playoff run here. Let's do some kind of a play-in game. I get what Damian Lillard is trying to do or how he's positioning things. But I also want to say this, and I mentioned this with Dave. There's certain times where you want to hear certain things, and I'm going to go back to this because we were doing this with Blake Snell when it came to baseball, and this isn't apples to apples by any stretch of the imagination, but there's certain times I think fans want to hear certain things, and I don't think fans want to hear that right now. They don't. You know, they don't. Damian Lillard is one of the best players in the NBA. And I'm not saying Damian Lillard's got to go out there and if they don't have a chance to make the playoffs to play as if, you know, these are playoff games. I'm not saying that that's what he needs to do. But what would be nice from a player like Damian Lillard is to say, man, I can't believe our season got cut like this. I can't believe what's happened across the country and across the world over the last almost 3 months now, right? That we've been in shutdown and quarantine and everything else, or 2.5 months, whatever it is. I can't believe how long this has, you know, gone on, and I can't believe how many people were affected. The least I can do is go back to my job when I'm asked to go back to my job and just play out the rest of the season. If that's what the NBA needs, if that's in the best interest of the NBA, and it's in the best interest of, you know, obviously the players out there and everything else, then just handle it. Handle it for the few games that you have to do it for. Because at the end of the day, he's still going to, you know, obviously be making an incredible amount of money being around the NBA. Fans don't want to hear comments like that at a time like this. And I'll go, you know, just a step further. that's not the Memphis Grizzlies. That's not the NBA's fault that your team couldn't hang on to the eighth seed where the Memphis Grizzlies are sitting right now. It's also not the NBA's fault that the Portland Trailblazers have lost to. Look at all the teams that they've lost to this year. By the way, I think most of these teams are below 500. They've lost to the Warriors. They've lost to the Brooklyn Nets. They've lost to Sacramento twice. They've lost to New Orleans three times. The Cavs, the Suns, the Knicks, Memphis twice, Atlanta, Minnesota. Portland is one of the biggest disappointments this season. The Trailblazers last year made it to the Western Conference Finals. Not that I thought they would make it back to the Western Conference Finals. Just things played out the way they did last year. But they are one of the more disappointing teams in the NBA. That's not the NBA's fault. That's not the Memphis Grizzlies' fault. That's a Portland Trailblazers problem. And Damian Lillard, as great as he is, he's an unbelievable basketball player. Your team underperformed this year. So when you're asked to go back to work, just go back to work. Maybe this is all posturing. Maybe this is all just trying to put the Portland Trailblazers in a position where, you know, they can obviously have a shot at making the postseason. I know that's all Damian Lillard cares about. He wants to get back, have a chance at the playoffs, and he wants to face the Lakers in the first round. Can you blame him? That'd be a fantastic matchup. But if that doesn't play out, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't go back to your job and finish out the season. And I guess in a sense, just be grateful that we have this opportunity to finish out the season. Manuel and Gardena. Manuel, appreciate you calling in, bud. How are you?
The number one Alan Sliwa fan in Los Angeles. How you living, my man? You have a good holiday?
Man, it was great. To be honest with you, it was so nice to just kind of have that extra day off. And then it was also great, Manuel, to come back to work tonight. And we actually, I actually feel like we're talking about some things that can very well push us towards an NBA season.
You're echoing the sentiments of the good man, Curtis. But I'm going to get to the point. I've always been a Damian Dollar fan. But today, he stepped out of line, man. You know, first off, I'm glad you illustrated that. They were one of the four favorites to win the West, okay, going into the season on the heels of that Western Conference Finals appearance. So it's nobody's fault but Portland's that they became the Fail Blazers this year. Mm-hmm. That's on the Fail Blazers, first off. Now, second off, I got no problem with any of these professional athletes that choose to stay home, stay in quarantine, or anything like that. However, they should not get paid, man, straight up. Because you know what, and I know people always say, you know, professional sports ain't the plumbing industry. It's not even the sports casting industry. Per se, but if you don't show up to work, man, in America, you don't get paid. You know what I mean?
And you lose your job.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even saying they should lose their job. I'm just saying they shouldn't get paid. They can have their contract for the next year, you know, and all that, but they should not get one more red cent from the NBA if the majority votes to go back to work. That was pretty weak. And I hope the Dame comes to his senses. As always, Sleestack, you are killing it, my man. Keep up the good work.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you for calling in, Manuel. Yeah, listen, I'm right with you. Timing is everything. Now is not the time to be saying, well, if we don't have a chance, I'm just going to be – I'll be there with my team, but I'm not going to be playing. Listen, I'm not saying that somebody can't make an argument right now and say, well, Al, you know when the season's coming to an end – most stars sit out, right? And that's, by the way, that doesn't help my argument, but that's a reality. Most stars sit out. But in this, under these circumstances, I just think right now is a different time. And nobody wants to hear players complaining. If the Portland Trailblazers had a better season, I know there was 19, 18 games left, whatever the case was. But if they had a better season, they wouldn't be in their position. So they wouldn't be in this position. So the only... the only person that Damian Lillard should blame is himself. He shouldn't look at the NBA, and he shouldn't look at, you know, other teams to try and – or the NBA to bail them out of trying to get into the postseason. Okay, so here I am promoting that it's been 18 years since something happened, and then I talk about Damian Lillard. So this day in Lakers history is a very, very important day in Lakers history. And when we come back, I'll tell you what it is. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, so 18 years ago today. Damn, it's been 18 years. Very, very significant play in Los Angeles Lakers history. This is one of those moments, by the way. I know exactly where I was. I know who I was with. I know how I reacted. Lakers were down 20 points. By the way, they should be replaying this game right now. I don't know if Spectrum is. I got on the background right now. Game 7 of the World Series on ESPN. The Cubbies versus the Cleveland Indians. Throwing that on in the background. So 18 years ago today, Lakers were down 20. I want to say in the first half. Actually, no. I know they were down 20. They were down 40-20. And they're down 2-1 in the series against the Sacramento Kings. Arguably one of the most nerve-wracking series I've ever watched as a Laker fan. We've all been through some very nerve-wracking games, but I don't know what it was about that series against the Sacramento Kings. You felt like we had a legitimate shot at losing that series. So the Lakers were down 40-20. They come all the way back, sitting in the fourth quarter, down 2-1 in the series. By the way, this is at Staples Center. If you're down 2-1 in the series and you're losing that game 4 and it's from home, you're probably not coming back to win that series. Sacramento's up 99-97. Kobe has the ball in his hands, few seconds left to go, gets to the basket, misses a shot. Shaq takes a shot off the rebound. He misses the putback. By the way, that's a shot Kobe usually hits. Shaq, it was a gimme all by himself. Vlade was there, but you know, obviously not that much impact. The only way the Sacramento Kings can lose, and the only way the Kings can lose the series, is if my guy, who probably should be one of our favorite Laker players of all time, because in this specific case, Vlade Divac tips the ball out perfectly to Robert Horry, as if he's playing for the Los Angeles Lakers, as if he's still part of the Lakers when Magic was there and Eldon Campbell was there and some of those other players were there. Perfectly tips it, has the eye contact. I saw Vlade look at Horry and say, "I got you." Horry gets it, throws up the three, 101-99. Horry starts looking at the Lakers bench like, "Do you guys know who I am? Do you know how many championships I have? Do you know how clutch I am?" And the Lakers end up winning the series 4-3. They win that game in Sacramento. I'm not kidding. I mean, for me personally, that was one of the most nerve-wracking series that I've ever watched Lakers play. Game 7, I remember Game 7, I felt like I was actually one of the players. I was pacing at home outside, couldn't eat. It's so funny to look back. When you look back at those games, I was in high school at the time. I think I was I think I was just in college, maybe my first or second year in college. But just pacing back and forth, thinking in your mind, are we really going to lose? Are we going to lose? And we had so much confidence in the Lakers back then because you got accustomed to winning. That's the bottom line. That Lakers team with Rick Fox, Robert Horry, Derek Fisher, Kobe, and Shaq, and then, of course, you had all these other guys, the Brian Shaws, everybody else, but you just got accustomed to winning. So I remember in that Game 7, walking into that Game 7, you almost felt like you were walking around like, we're going to win this. Yeah, of course. Of course we're going to win this. But you were still nervous as you can possibly be, and then the Lakers obviously figured out a way to win that series, and then they'd eventually win another NBA championship. Curtis, let's go right to
that. I was just going to tell you, I have the sound of that call if you want to read it.
Let's go right to it right now.
Seconds, Kobe Bryant against Christie. Kobe Bryant on the move against Christie. In for the right, flips the shot up, no good. O'Neal lays it up, missed it. Ball tipped out to Horry, a straight on three. Good! The Lakers have won! Robert Horry's greatest hits tour continues.
Oh, no doubt about it. He's got to be getting a Grammy for that one.
Do you understand? I don't know. I think most Laker fans know this, but Robert Horry, who's more clutch than Horry as a role player in the postseason? Who? I mean, honestly, think who? You know how many big shots Ori hit in his career? Ori hit big shots for the Houston Rockets, where he won two NBA championships. Big shots for the Los Angeles Lakers, the reason why they call him Big Shot Rob. Big shots for the Lakers, you know, obviously here in that those three championships he won with Kobe and Shaq. And then I think he got two more in San Antonio and again hit big time shots. I mean, Ori was so clutch. So today was 18 years ago that Robert Ori hit, in my opinion, one of the, you know, obviously biggest shots in postseason history. A little bit later in the show, by the way, I put this out there on Twitter. So I'll read off some of these tweets later in the show. What's your favorite Lakers postseason buzzer beater? And there's a few out there. So we do our Power Five at 8:45. So we do that a little bit later in the show. Jesse and I will walk through it. Curtis will join in as well. But the biggest shots in Lakers history in the postseason, you can go to the Kobe Bryant shots against the Phoenix Suns. You can go the Meta World Peace shot against the Suns. That Pau Gasol tip-in against Oklahoma City Thunder. Magic skyhook over the Boston Celtics. Robert Ori shot. Derek Fisher's .4. So there are some big-time moments for the Lakers. And Robert Ori, when I saw that ESPN Los Angeles put that out on Twitter, that's the first thing I thought of. I was like, yeah, that's one of those moments where you're talking about where you were, who you were with, and a special moment in Lakers history. Okay, Thank You Thursdays, presented by Valvoline. Let me give you guys a quick idea of what we got going on here on Thursdays coming up, okay? So 710 ESPN wants to salute all of our frontline workers and thank them for their bravery and tireless work during the COVID-19 pandemic. If you know someone who is working as a healthcare provider, EMS worker, food service professional, police and firefighter, you can nominate him or her today. Here's how you can do it. Email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com, and provide first and last name, city, and occupation. Or post a short video nominating your frontline worker on Twitter or Instagram and use the hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll award a frontline worker a thank you gift prize pack that includes a $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change and $100 gift cards from Wingstop, Shooteria.com, and VSLiquor.com. Thank You Thursdays presented by Valvoline. Pull into your local Valvoline Instant Oil Change for 20% off any service, plus grocery workers, delivery drivers, medical, and first responders get an additional 10% off. To show your ID, visit SoCalOilChange.com to get this offer and find location. So make sure that hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. We got Shootout coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. A little bit later in the show, just a quick reminder, James Herbert from CBS Radio, NBA writer for CBS Sports. We'll talk specifically about Lakers basketball, and we'll also hit on some other NBA topics. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, coming up in a little bit, by the way, Lakers owner Jeannie Buss was on the Daddy Issues podcast with Joe Buck and Oliver Hudson. So we'll get into that about really just when Jim Buss was running basketball operations, how things were kind of running and some of the, you know, obviously key decisions that she had to make. So we'll do that. But coming up right now, let's get some Shootouts started. All right, fellas. How are we doing over there?
Oh, I'm doing good, but my body is confused.
What's what part?
One where we've been in lockdown for what feels like forever now.
Yep.
Quarantined. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, we just had a 3-day weekend. But it's like,
and you still have to work.
Jesse
rolled up his sleeves, Curtis, while you and I didn't do anything, bro. I don't want you, Curtis, to make it sound like you and I worked because we did nothing. And Jesse, on the other hand, he went hard to work.
I went hard to work, but don't get it wrong. I made sure on Sunday, which I was off, that
you got your breaks in.
I got my gaming in. Me and my friends played a new game called Golf with Your Friends, and it's basically a video game where you play mini golf, where physics make no sense, and you play on like pirate ships, and you go into space and Mars. It's great. And then I saw A Quiet Place, which is a great movie.
Okay, by the way, first of all, real quick, Shootout, presented by the Wallace Firm. Business owners, call Brad Wallace and the Wallace Firm. Your insurance company may have written your policy, but they don't decide the law. For a free consultation and review of your policy to see if you're eligible for compensation for lost revenue, call 844-844-WINS. 844-844-WINS, proud partner of Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. So we appreciate their partnership. I know we and we're going to hit on some of these basketball and these NBA subjects and everything else. How about golf this weekend? How big of a success was that? Did either of you guys watch Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning versus Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady?
No, my eyes were glued on the Travis Rogers John Ireland golf match, to be honest with you.
I was unaware what was happening until I saw it on Twitter.
Wasn't that on Saturday?
Yeah, it was on Saturday.
Saturday. Well, John mentioned that he thought he was going to lose to Travis. Yeah, Travis is a very undercover athlete. Like you just
Yeah,
it's just very undercover. But he played college baseball, didn't he?
Yep.
He did for Santa Barbara.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Santa Barbara. UCSB. Okay, why don't Jess, why don't you get things started?
All right. So over the weekend, the Wizards' Bradley Beal appeared on All the Smoke podcast with Matt Barnes and oh my God, what's his name? Steven Jackson.
Yeah, and Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes.
He shared a story about possibly almost getting traded. Now, the team in question is going to surprise you because it's a team I've never heard of this up until this happened. And I have a clip from that podcast. So this is what Bradley Beal explains to where he was going to get traded on draft day.
The whole night, I kind of had a feeling I was either going to go two or three. We knew AD was going one. So I either knew I was going to Charlotte or Washington. And so, boom, we sitting in the draft room. Sure enough, my agent tapped me. He was like, it's possible you might go to OKC. I said, damn, how am I going to go there? I ain't even work out for OKC. I only worked out for three teams. You know, so I'm like, Washington, Cleveland, and Charlotte. I'm like,
was Harden still?
That's when Harden was still in OKC. So the deal was to trade James to Washington, right? OKC gets the third pick. No. It was either the second or third pick. They were going to trade up to two or three, get me, trade James to Washington.
For you.
And then for me. And then that's when they'd rock down like that. I'd have been in OKC with KD and Russ.
I mean, obviously, Harden is who is Harden, but yeah, a dead spot up, oof, that would have been fun.
Yeah, so ultimately, the Thunder offered Harden to Washington for Beal, but Washington rejected the deal because Harden wanted a max contract, and the Wizards owner denied it.
Oh, the Wizards are the best. They're just the best. Let me go back for a quick second. So he said New Orleans. Who else was on that list? Charlotte and Washington.
Charlotte, now the Hornets, and right. then Washington.
Okay, so those are the three teams. Doesn't it always feel like, and maybe New Orleans is going to change kind of a tide here. They seem to, after they obviously got Zion and they got a lot of young pieces, aren't the bad teams just always bad? I mean, am I wrong on this? Like, for the most part, usually – the bad teams are always bad. And when you hear those names being thrown out, I'm like, what's changed in any of those cities? Not really anything has changed. Now, New Orleans got lucky to get Zion, and they obviously traded Anthony Davis, but it's not like that team was having incredible success, and they had to get AD, obviously, through the draft. But the one thing, like you were about to say, Jess, can you imagine the Thunder with Russell Westbrook at your one, a natural Bradley Beal 2 spot-up shooter at your 2, and KD, obviously the best player, top 2, top 3 in the NBA. That would have been a team to reckon with, but it also, as much criticism as the Oklahoma City Thunder have got because that trade, when they traded away James Harden, which they should get criticism, they should have tried to give themselves a chance to win an NBA championship or more chances, but damn, do they draft well. And they know what to do when it comes to some of these, younger players. They could have had Bradley Beal. That would have been an insane, insane lineup. Hopefully Bradley Beal, it wouldn't have took him too long to fit in so that he could have obviously been a player that that contributes right away.
Yeah, and not to mention, they also had Serge Ibaka on that team.
Serge Ibaka. I want to say was Steven Adams probably there. I think Steven Adams was there.
I don't think Steven Adams was there.
Oh, no, he got drafted probably.
He got drafted after, I think. After that. I think he might have been there for, like, KD's last year, but I think he was there after. I think Kendrick Perkins might have been still been their center at that point.
Well, let me, you know, and I think it's so easy to talk about, it's so easy to kind of talk about the mistakes certain teams make, but even the Thunder right now, how are they sitting in their, whatever, they're in the fifth place, sixth place in the West? Everybody thought this would be a rebuilding year. I've always respected what that franchise has done because they're such a small market, but at the same time, you know, they obviously did trade away a legitimate chance to get at least one NBA championship. They would have had Harden, Westbrook, and KD in their primes together, drafted all at the same time. You don't think that team would have eventually won an NBA championship?
Oh, I think if, as long as, you know, all three had their head gone, they would have at least made a finals, another finals appearance. But for whatever reason, it's just, it's, you know, some teams are just kind of...
Well, it came down to money. They didn't want to offer Harden. I think it literally came down to, this is the worst part, I think it came down to, like, literally a few million dollars, like $4 million or something along those lines. And that's Curtis type of money. You know, Curtis doesn't, he doesn't care about money like that. But for other people, that's a lot of money.
Is that a shot at me?
Or this is talking about your finances. I should never be talking about how much money that you have.
Pour one out for my finances. Pour out that 40.
Okay, look, I got to get you guys this because I gave my opinion on this, and I didn't get a chance to, you know, obviously really hear too much other from other than the Twitter perspective of it. Curtis, what did you think of Damian Lillard pretty much not participating in these meaningless games? Do you think it's justified? Which, I will go back to this. It's not uncommon for NBA players to sit towards the end of the season when they know they're out. That's not uncommon. But do you think under these circumstances he should be making comments like that, or do you think you just keep some of those comments to yourself?
It's difficult because if everything were normal and it was just, you know, we weren't going through this, I think obviously it would be very selfish. It's still selfish in these times, honestly, just because I think we're all kind of looking forward to the sports, and I think the sports is part of what's going to, you know, help us weather these next few months. And the fact that you can't even, like, get up for that for your fans only, that's the part that kind of irks me. Not so much the, hey, you know, it's not safe or whatever. I understand that. But I think in the timing and everything, it's just a bad look.
Jess, what do you think?
I get it. And I think, you know, if it wasn't him, it was going to be someone else. And I think for that reason alone, it takes, you know, a lot of courage and a lot of guts for just to say that, you know what, I'm not cool with it. I'm not fine with it. I'm going to say something. It probably wasn't, you know, the right time. And like you said, you know, people don't want to hear that. But, I mean, the guy's allowed to feel a certain way. And if he wants to voice it, then, you know, all to him. And if that's how he feels, that's how he feels. And it's hard because we're in such a unique situation that I get it. And you know what? Like, I really can't be mad at him. At least not that much, because, you know, he was the first player to kind of speak out against it. And, you know, other people are going to see that because it's not, you know, a fourth stringer at the end of the bench. It's Dame Lillard, a bona fide star in the NBA.
But don't you guys think, you know, or at least I'll address this to you, Jess, don't you think as of right now, I mean, unless you're just trying to position yourself to say, unless you kind of have it in the back of your mind, let me see if I can make a pitch. And I know this is going to get a lot of run over all the media outlets. Can I make a pitch to make sure that by the time the NBA addresses the Players Association on Friday, that at least this is part of the conversation? He wants a shot at making the playoffs. And I get it. Like, why wouldn't he? This is Damian Lillard. They had 19 games left. But I also blame the Portland Trailblazers because you had opportunities this year to, you know, obviously be a part of the postseason. And you certainly didn't put yourself in a position to do so. Jess, I know you got another one. Go ahead, bud.
Yes. So, in kind of speaking on disappointing teams, but that's risen up. The Clippers, Caron Butler, he was with the Clippers at the start of that Lob City era with Chris Paul.
Yeah, they're going to be, by the way, they'll be, when this season comes back, if it does, they got a huge benefit to this. They will get to play on neutral sites. Like, they'll never have to worry about fans being an issue when it comes to coming to Laker games or something like that, or, you know, their own home games. I think the neutral site is actually better for them because there'll be no fans for either team. But Caron Butler and the Clippers CP3 days, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Caron Butler was on Clutch Points Battle for LA podcast with Tumor, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Azarli and Ryan Ward. And he kind of opened up about the time with the Clippers. And he basically said that that second year with the team was the best Clippers team ever. And it really should have contended for the championship. But he goes on to speak that the chemistry kind of went away. And a lot of the egos played a huge part in, you know, them not reaching more, not being more successful.
Not getting past the second round.
Not getting past the second round, yeah. You know, Caron Butler says he felt like there was just a lot of maturity in the team. And he even goes to say if, you know, if he talked to more Clippers from that era, would they feel the same way? And he's like, absolutely. You know, when you look at some of the legacies of these players, you're going to look back at your basketball self and been like, you know, when did I realistically have a best chance at capturing the title? And a lot of those players with the Clippers, those 2-3 years, that was it for them. And they just, they couldn't get over the hump.
Bro, they were so freaking talented. I remember this game specifically, and it was at Staples Center. I think it was game 6 against the Rockets a few years back, maybe 2016, right? So Chris Paul is there, obviously Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Jamal Crawford, J.J. Redick. They got a squad. I mean, they got a really good team. And
they had a good bench, too.
It seems like they have all the right pieces, okay? They're facing the Houston Rockets. What are they up? This is against – this is at Staples Center.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
They're up like maybe 15, 16 points. And all of a sudden the Rockets, with James Harden on the bench, come all the way back. This is the clincher game for the Clippers. This is their chance to get to the Western Conference Finals, which they've never been to. And I don't – if you define choke job, I mean, honestly, and I'm not saying this to be disrespectful, but it was – such a choke job for them to not win that game and then end up, I think, losing in game 7. I think it was game 7 after that. I want to say that was 6. That was 7. Game 7 against the Rockets in Houston. And then that was it. That was a wrap for, you know, the Clippers. Yep. That team was so talented. And to never have a shot to win an NBA championship or get to the Western Conference Finals, it most definitely is one of the more disappointing teams in or teams that didn't live up to the hype and the expectations. But I say this, Jess. I feel like a lot of players have come out, J.J. Redick. A lot of players have come out like over the years to say, yeah, you know what? We just didn't have the chemistry. And chemistry is such an important thing at times.
And it's underrated.
It's underrated. That's actually underrated. Where I was getting to. I mean, the Lakers, if the Lakers win a championship this year, they have talent. Don't get me wrong. Of course, LeBron and Anthony Davis, these are two of the top five players in the NBA. But if they do win it, I think chemistry will have a big part to do with it. And a lot of the times with, you know, many of these teams, they might not be better than another team. Dallas didn't have more talent than the Miami Heat, right, when LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh was there. But they had incredible chemistry. And I think that typically, if you don't have the talent as another team, you might just click better. And the Clippers, that team just never clicked together.
No, and it's a shame because they were – I mean, at one point you can arguably say Blake Griffin was the third best player in the NBA during that time. There was an argument that that could have been – it could have been LeBron, KD, Blake Griffin, and you could have argued, you know, a handful of other people. They were
that good. Don't put me in
that
argument.
But, I mean, you could.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. And listen, and Chris Paul, that was like the ideal – ideal quarterback, right? That was the guy that, and especially for Laker fans, there was no worse position back then because you thought you were supposed to get Chris Paul. You thought you were going to get Chris Paul, you know, obviously when that trade got nixed, right? And then all of a sudden he ends up with the Clippers, and the Clippers freaking ball out for years, and the Lakers are a lottery team. You know, they're a play, we're looking at what are our chances to get a top three pick. I mean, that's where we spent, you know, 5-6 years over the last 5-6 years. That's really all you really cared about from a Laker perspective. Yeah, that Clipper team, you know what they did? They acted like the Clippers, and everyone will still refer to them as the Clippers, as a franchise that just can't have success until they get over that hump. And that franchise didn't obviously get the chance to do it back in those days. And until a Kawhi Leonard or a Paul George or a Steve Ballmer or a Doc Rivers find a way to get over that, they'll still kind of have that stigma behind them.
Clippers gonna Clippers.
Clip City, Chip City, right?
Yeah, that's
that worked out.
Marcellus has been saying that for a long, long time. By the way, I do absolutely love his loyalty, because that he's going to die to his grave with the teams that he loves. So nothing wrong with that. All right, good stuff, fellas. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Okay, do this. When we do our Power 5 at 8:45, come up with a few of your favorite buzzer beaters in Lakers history. So we'll do that. We'll do that in a little bit as
all
well.
I've got a couple on my head.
Okay. 18 years ago, by the way, let me read off this tweet real quick. Stephen Bruning says, like the show. Mason John, give you a hard time. It's hilarious. Good bit. Point of tweet. It's Big Shot Bob, not Big Shot Rob. And Jesse has the best soundtracks for intro and outros. So I'm going to let me a couple things to the Stephen. Just so you know, Curtis technically right now is playing some of those tracks, but I will say all three of us have definitely a good vibe of some of the tracks that you're talking about, so I appreciate that. Second thing I did look up on Wikipedia, is it Big Shot Rob or is it Big Shot Rob? Both of them are in there. So technically, I still think 18 years ago, whether it's Big Shot Bob or Rob, people know what I'm referring to. And when we come back, I want to actually hit on one more piece. I teased this a little bit. Lakers owner Jeannie Buss on Daddy Issues podcast with Joe Buck and Oliver Hudson. The time that Jim Buss, so we were talking about a few years back, 5 years back, or for the last 5 years or so, Lakers were obviously going for draft picks. She did talk a little bit about that time and her trying to kind of figure out how the Lakers would get back on track the way they are now. We'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Curtis, I know you're... It's okay. Listen.
It's hard to be entertained when you're here by yourself, honestly. It's very
difficult. But they are. I will say this. We do have a great library of good beats. We really do. I mean, from a hip-hop perspective, obviously you guys know I love reggae, but there's a lot of just really, really good beats. Do you guys remember the time that we played Biggie to Mason? And who he thought that was.
Oh, he thought it was Kanye West? He
thought it was Kanye. And then we played Biggie to John. And what did John think it was?
I'm pretty sure John pretty sure said it was Tupac.
Yeah, John thought it was
always
Tupac.
Tupac or Biggie.
Yeah, John thought it was Tupac. So they were a little off on that one. Okay, real quick. Lakers That's owner Jeannie Buss on the Daddy Issues podcast with Joe Buck and Oliver Hudson. She is talking about her brother Jim Buss, who never really established an identity for the Lakers when he was running the team. And this is, you know, obviously interesting because look at where the Lakers were. And it's not me trying to point the finger, oh, this is all Jim Buss's fault. But, you know, certainly there was a time for the Lakers where you felt like, where are we going? And then all of a sudden, over the last couple of years, I don't think you have those question marks anymore. You feel like that the leadership right now in charge from top to bottom. You know, obviously it starts with Jeannie, Rob Pelinka, who's the president of basketball operations, running the GM. He's running all the basketball decisions. They have not only, it feels like, have they, most definitely turned down the tide and the perception for this Lakers franchise, but it didn't happen overnight. Here's Jeannie Buss on the Daddy Issues podcast with Joe Buck and Oliver Hudson.
When you're down and losing, and then my brother was changing coaches every 18 months. And, sometimes you have to make coaching changes. I get that. But when you go from a coach like Mike Brown, whose emphasis was defense, to a coach like Mike D'Antoni, who really doesn't worry so much about defense.
that was the craziest coaching decision for me.
That's two different rosters that you need. Like, and so it's like then the outside world thinks they don't know what direction are you going. You should be able to see a pathway as to you hire a coach, you give him the players that play his style of basketball, and then the rest, you know, you make decisions that follow the decision before, and it, you can see a path. You can see what the person's thinking, but I couldn't see what was going on and where he was trying to go and what our identity was going to be as a team.
All right. That's Jeannie Buss right there, owner of the Los Angeles Lakers. So, you know, that was such a tough time for Laker fans, because it's one thing if you feel like, okay, we had a bad season because players got injured, or you had a bad season because you're part of kind of a rebuilding phase, which of course the Lakers were. They were definitely in a rebuilding phase. This was towards the end of Kobe's career. You were paying Kobe for what he had done, not what he was currently doing. And it was also just, you know, obviously a thank you to the 20 years that this man rocked the purple and gold for at Staples Center, just for Laker fans worldwide. But that was a tough time because you just didn't know the direction. What direction are the Lakers going in? Where are we going? And, you know, I'm sure for the Buss family too, this is the first time they're obviously without the great Dr. Jerry Buss, the greatest owner in the history of sports, and all the success that he had. Now you're trying to live up to and probably a unrealistic expectation for anybody in sports. I mean, Dr. Jerry Buss, I was doing this last week. If you guys remember, I had Jamal Wilkes on, Hall of Famer Jamal Wilkes on. And when we're having the conversation, we were talking about Dr. Jerry Buss bought the team in 79, 80, the Lakers. That same year they draft Magic Johnson. 1980, Lakers win an NBA championship with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar sidelined because of an injury, and the Lakers in Philadelphia, that's the start of the Showtime era. So right off the bat, when Dr. Jerry Buss bought the Los Angeles Lakers, instant success. Instant success. They end up winning 5 championships in the 80s. They end up winning 10 championships under Dr. Jerry Buss. So that time was a very tough time under Jim Buss, to try and kind of figure out where is this franchise going. What I could tell you now, and this is just my own personal opinion, okay, I feel like there is direction now. You have LeBron for this season and then 2 more years. You know Anthony Davis is going to be the future of the Los Angeles Lakers. You obviously know that. And then it's going to be a matter of trying to attract another star when that time comes, when that opportunity is there. But that's going to be after, obviously, LeBron James ends his career and hopefully ends it with the Los Angeles Lakers. You kind of have a current plan, and then you still have a long-term plan. I didn't feel that the last couple of years when, you know, Jim Buss, like Jeannie Buss mentioned there, the style of coaches they were bringing in, the Luol Deng signing, the Timofey Mozgov contract. There were a lot of times where I think there were a lot of questions in the air of where the Lakers were going. But it's good to know now that we feel like we know exactly where we are and where this team is heading. All right, James Herbert from CBS Sports, he covers the NBA for CBS, had an article today on CBSSports.com, 8 big questions as NBA prepares to resume the season. One of those and a good part of the conversation will be about the Los Angeles Lakers and just their positioning. So we'll do that coming up next. Power 5 also coming up a little bit later. Top 5 Laker postseason buzzer beaters. We'll do that around 8:45, 8:50 or so. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. We've got James Herbert from CBS Sports joining Lakers Talk. 8 big questions as NBA prepares to resume the season. James, just wanted to tell you that we appreciate your time, and it's a great article. It's actually kind of exciting for the first time here, I feel like, in a while, where we can start kind of talking a little hoops.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It is funny, like, it took some sort of mental gymnastics to just get back in the mode of, like, thinking about, okay, what were the storylines before everything shut down? What do we still want to learn if there is some sort of conclusion to this regular season, or if we go straight into the playoffs, how do we look at things? So that piece was basically just my way of being like, all right, well, we can actually talk basketball again, and it doesn't feel completely pointless.
Well, it's funny because on Friday I was doing the show, and I went to the standings. And I only went to the standings because I was trying to make a point of, you know, looking at some of the teams that are the bottom tier, the 15th in the West, 15th in the East, just looking. And I just caught myself. I'm like, wait a minute, are you actually back on the NBA standings page? I haven't been on this page in so long. But it's good to obviously have some of these conversations again. So first thing I want to ask you, you know, I know you go through a bunch of different points in your story. It's on CBS Sports right now. But the first question I'll ask you is, what are some of the questions that come up to mind for you when we talk about the Lakers? And if we get that opportunity, obviously resume the season. They were playing some great basketball. They were coming off a couple big wins. They lost obviously to Brooklyn, but Lakers in this, I guess you could say, small category of favorites that we thought that could win a championship. What are some of the questions if we do get that opportunity to come back?
Yeah, I think the big thing to me, and the one I highlighted in that story, is just the half-court offense. Can it be better than it's been in the balance of the season? Can they have some sort of identity when LeBron is on the bench? In a playoff scenario, does the fact that LeBron is playing 40-plus minutes and they're going to have an individual game plan to exploit the weaknesses of whatever team they're playing against trump any of the sort of concerns that people have had about them throughout the regular season? I think on balance, when you look at how the Lakers played before the shutdown, they exceeded most people's expectations, but I think that's because of how incredible they were on defense and how unstoppable they were in transition. When it actually just came to going up against a set defense, they were like average. They were better than average when LeBron was on the court, but I think because they played with two bigs so much of the time, and then because LeBron had to bear so much of the responsibility of playmaking, this wasn't like an elite half-court offensive team. Now, in the playoffs, when LeBron has the ball, he's better than anybody else in the NBA at kind of controlling the game and just exerting his will and zeroing in on individual matchups to exploit. That maybe this isn't really a point of concern if you're optimistic about the Lakers. I think that that's the way that you would look at it. But, I mean, I've obviously been extremely impressed by how they played this season, and I just wanted to kind of zero in on the one question that I still have with them.
And listen, it's fair. Every team, obviously, there's going to be question marks, all of them. I mean, and we know the favorites should be the Lakers, the Bucks, and the Clippers. Those are the three teams that I think most people felt stood out in the during the season, and I'm sure those are going to be the three favorites when we get in. But everybody has somewhat of a flaw. I'll get your opinion on this, because when you say, you know, from a half court perspective, Lakers not nearly as effective when they're running the fast break. Obviously, when LeBron is slicing and dicing different defenses, do you think the Rondo gets a lot of criticism, or the fingers pointed at him? Sometimes it's just based upon small sample sizes, and Rondo certainly wasn't having this amazing season by any stretch of the imagination. But do you think Rondo, come postseason, when, you know, that where he's probably going to be at his best, is in the postseason, his knowledge of the game, obviously his experience? Or do you think that a lot of where maybe fans or media pointed at Rondo just not being effective anymore will also leak into the postseason?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, the playoff Rondo has become a thing, and I think the idea behind that is this is a guy who uses his basketball IQ, who understands game plans as well as anybody in the NBA, who knows exactly what the opposing team is trying to do. And he is able to sometimes in the playoffs come up with these huge games, even if his regular seasons have not been that impressive. I think if you're taking a glass half full approach to this, then you can say, okay, despite the fact that he's received all of this criticism in the regular season, when he's been on the court with LeBron, it's been better than people thought. I mean, a lot of people thought that this just would not work. Their numbers together last year were terrible. I think they're a plus +8 net rating with them both on the court this season. It's just when LeBron has not been on the court and Rondo has been out there, it has not worked as well. I think you can look at it in a couple ways. And in the playoffs, that basketball IQ does matter, and I think Frank Vogel will be very intentional about who was out there on the court with him, trying to preserve some spacing. But I do think the other thing is, in the playoffs, that's typically when poor spacing hurts you the most. That's when defenses will be much more brazen about just completely ignoring you on the perimeter and really trying to make you pay if you have somebody like Rondo out there who you don't necessarily have to guard. Now, his shooting percentage is not like that awful from 3-point range, as if he's shooting completely wide open ones. So sure. I think it's a scenario where, like, I personally, if I were a Laker fan, like, I'd be more comfortable in situations where you have, say, like an Alex Caruso on the court who has a just ridiculous net rating when he's out there with LeBron, than a Rondo who you don't have to defend really on the offensive end. But I think he does have a track record of making people like me look silly in playoff situations.
James Herbert from CBS Sports joining Lakers talk. Eight big questions as NBA prepares to resume the season. Just your opinion on this, James. Who do you think would be the toughest out? I know there's a bunch of different playoff formats being thrown out there, and hopefully mm-hmm. we get some clarity by the end of the week or maybe some point next week or something along those lines, where we just have a good understanding of what that format could look like. But just, again, sticking with the Lakers, who do you think would be the toughest out for the Lakers if it is a 1-16 format? What's a team you think is going to post? And I'm not trying to put the East and the West on separate blocks. I'm just kind of bundling all these teams together. Who presents the most challenges for the Lakers? You think it's the Bucks or the Clippers, or do you think there's another team out there?
I mean, both of those teams are elite, and the sort of, I think, conventional wisdom among sort of more analytics-minded people is, like, you have to say the Bucks, you have to respect how dominant they've been statistically this year. I think by any sort of metric, they've been the best team in the league. But, like, the Clippers were my pick before the season, and I still kind of would be a little more worried about them. I think they're a little harder to game plan against. If you're the Lakers and you're looking at the Bucks, I at least know how I would play them. You essentially do the same thing that Toronto did in last year's playoffs, and I think the Lakers have personnel that is pretty well suited to that in terms of the bigs that they have, in terms of the physicality that they play with, the ability to protect the paint. The Lakers do that extremely well. They mirror the Bucks in a lot of ways. So I kind of think that the Clippers, based on just how there is no real answer for Kawhi when he is rolling, how Paul George is another guy get his shot at will. Like, that to me is the biggest threat, and that's the matchup that I think everybody is sort of looking forward to, or hoping this will still happen regardless of how the NBA handles this sort of these various scenarios that they're throwing out there.
Yeah, by the way, James, I'm with you. You know, I can't be any more, you know, any bigger of a Laker fan, and I've always kind of thought this, that yeah, the Clippers, that's the matchup. And that's not to say, I mean, look, imagine if, you know, you're the Lakers or the Clippers, you're in a 7-game set against the Bucks. That's a dogfight. That's an incredibly tough matchup. Maybe things, I don't want to say they're leveling out a little bit, because, okay, well, the Bucks won't be at home now. That home court is gone, you know, for everybody. It's going to be in an empty arena. So maybe that even benefits the Clippers more, because if you're playing in a 7-game set, Lakers and the Clippers, and it's in Los Angeles, we know what the fan base is going to be at Staples Center, whether it's a Clipper home game or not. But I do think the way you just explained it there, that the Clippers present probably the toughest matchup. And I've said this, I always felt like that Markieff Morris signing for the Lakers in the buyout market was the best thing they could have done to try and kind of combat the Clippers, simply under the circumstances. And the same thing for the Clippers. They went out and traded for Marcus Morris, and, you know, the moves they made were directly against the Lakers. So it does feel like those two teams at one point will will, you know, obviously face each other, hopefully, if we can finish out the season. Okay, so after the big three in the NBA, and I'm talking about the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks, after those three teams, who's in that? I don't know if the right way to put it is in that next tier, but what team do you think becomes the biggest threat after those three teams? Is there a team that sticks out to you?
There are a few that I mentioned in my story. Like the Celtics, statistically, I think are up there. I think there's it's sort of a weird like matchup-based thing for them, right? Because like they could end up, if they ended up seeing Philly, that's a team that is underachieved this season but is just an awful matchup for Boston because they don't really have anybody that can guard Joel Embiid. I think Toronto statistically has been absolutely amazing, has exceeded everyone's expectations, second best defense in the league. I think Nick Nurse is easily going to win coach of the year, but you worry about them offensively in tight games against an elite defense. And then the other one I feel like I have to mention here is Houston. I still don't think we have a large enough sample size post-trade deadline to really get a handle on what Houston can be. Offensively, I have very few questions about them. They are extremely tough to deal with. The thing about them is, like, what is their defense? Like, are they for real on that end? The early results were super encouraging. They had, you know, a game against the Lakers where
I think you saw a lot of their strength defensively.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was Covington's first game basically suiting up at, you know, basically running center. That was the first one, and I think that definitely threw the Lakers off.
Yeah, it did. And I think whether you view their sort of leveling out at the end as people getting used to it and game planning differently, or maybe it was the Rockets kind of the physical toll that these games were taking on Covington and Tucker, and even guys like Daniel House, who ends up having to bang with bigger players, maybe that was it. Or honestly, maybe it was just fluky. Like I said, it's a 14-game sample size with this Covington-Tucker front court. I don't feel like I've seen enough, but I do know that at their best, they remind me of that team that we saw in 2018, except even more mobile with better perimeter defense. Covington has played out of his mind since he's gotten there. I think him and Tucker, when those two have been on the court, it has looked pretty good. Where it hasn't looked as good is when only one of them is on the court. And if you're asking those guys to do that incredibly tough job for 40-plus minutes a night, every single night, can they do that in the playoffs? Maybe. I just don't know. It looked like it was wearing them out a little bit before the hiatus started. But I do think they at least have the upside. And part of the logic of the trade that they made and the sort of broader philosophical shift that they had in playing without a traditional center is, yeah, there's potential for this to go wrong, but there's also potential for this to just go crazy. And that was
lightning
sort of,
in a bottle.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they've kind of embraced that sort of swing for the fences ethos here in what could end up being Mike D'Antoni's last season with the team. They're really going for it and doing something unconventional. And you don't know if they end up with a matchup against the Lakers. Does it look like that game that we saw when Covington, I think, came off the bench that night and they end up surprising them? Or do they get bullied like a lot of people sort of thought they might, and how we saw them just get dominated on the board there? They're the worst defensive rebounding team in the league since the trade deadline. So I think I'm very intrigued by them. I wouldn't put them in the same category as the Bucks, the Lakers, or the Clippers. I think they have a lot to prove, but that's a team that on the right night, especially when those three-point shots are falling, like they can beat everybody. That's just the way that they can beat anybody, I should say. That's the way that they're built.
Well, I said this to James Herbert from CBS Sports joining Lakers talk. I've mentioned this about the Rockets. Kind of my mentality on them has always been it's worth the risk. You know, I almost think that they have – you knew what your – ceiling was with Clint Capella, and it's like, look, you only have so many, you know, cracks at this. They're definitely trying to do it their own way. They don't care what the rest of the league is doing, so this is their way of trying to combat it. Okay, James, final question for you. A lot of different playoff formats I mentioned earlier when we were chatting are being thrown out there. Is there one that specifically that you want to see? Would you prefer that it's just kept the way we've always done it, or do you want to see something a little bit different based upon these circumstances?
I think for entertainment purposes, a play-in tournament would be really fun. I'm not sure you want to involve all 30 teams.
I
know Zach Lowe from ESPN had a proposal today where he was suggesting you include 20, and you basically only include the teams that have a realistic shot of making the playoffs had the season played out the way it was supposed to, and you leave the basically three spots up for grabs. That makes some sense to me. That's from an entertainment perspective, I would like to see that. I think from a practical perspective, honestly, my answer might be a little bit different. Like, just the simple go in with 16 teams, just do a playoff, do nothing else, maybe a couple of scrimmages before it starts. Like, don't invite too many people. Keep it just as sort of straightforward as you possibly can. That makes some sense to me as well. I think it wouldn't be the fairest way, but you're not going to find a perfectly fair solution here, and you're not going to keep everybody happy. So whether or not they involve more than 16 teams, like, we'll have to see. Maybe we'll know by the end of the week. But I do think that inviting all 30, while there's certainly incentives to do that in terms of the local TV deals and trying to salvage some sort of regular season, I don't think that's the most practical. I think that's more risk. That's inviting more problems. And I would be a little bit surprised if actually everybody, including, say, the Warriors of the world that have nothing to play for, if they were involved in this. I'm just not sure that's worth it.
James Herbert from CBS Sports. 8 big questions as NBA prepares to resume season. You can go on CBSSports.com to take a look at that article. James, really appreciate the time and the insight.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's do this when we come back. I mentioned it. I teased it a couple different times. I put this out on Twitter as well. So 18 years ago today, Robert Horry hit that dagger against the Sacramento Kings. Lakers went on to win the series. What's your favorite Lakers postseason buzzer beater? We'll do our Power 5 coming up next. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN.
Seconds, Kobe Bryant against Christie. Kobe Bryant on the move against Christie. In for the right, flips his shot up, no good. O'Neal lays it up, missed it. Ball tipped out to Horry, a straight on three. Good! The Lakers have won! Robert Horry's greatest hits tour continues.
Oh, no doubt about it. He's got to be getting a Grammy for that one.
All right, what's your favorite Lakers postseason buzzer beater? Horry did it 18 years ago. I'm watching the video. Bibby walking off. Bibby doesn't look too happy. Scott Pollard doesn't look too happy. Kobe all over Robert Horry. Lindsey Hunter, I think, is there. Just an amazing moment in Lakers history. So let's do our Power Five right now. And as we look at you, man. Look, Funch has just got both of you guys on point. Thank you, Curtis. Thank you, buddy. This, by the way, is always the Power 5 music. Just a fantastic beat. So I'm going to read off a couple quick tweets here, and then I want to get both Jesse, Curtis, one of your favorite Laker buzzer beaters. Manuel Felix 666 says, toss up between Horry and Fish. Jesus Gascon says, Mike Bibby has always been underrated, but the shot against, Horry's shot against the Kings. DM Drew GKG. Okay, fellas, can I put you guys both on a project here? It's a great point by Drew. He says, can someone find Chick's call of this shot? I just remember silence and Chick letting the crowd do the talking. I have chills just thinking about it. So see if we could find one of those, fellas. All right, what stands out to you guys? Curtis, you got something that is one of your favorite Laker moments when it comes to a buzzer beater?
I got two. The easy one is the first one I ever watched, which is the first ever Laker game I watched, which was the Fish Point Four. I know, I tell you guys, I was game. That's the earliest Laker memory I have. Mm-hmm. But I have an interesting one. It's probably one of the Kobe's most famous ones. How about the one over Rajah Bell in his face against the Suns?
Oh,
bro, that one too. The way he just kind of sized it up. The way he goes back and he kind of is pumping his fist, and the way Lamar Odom is going crazy. I mean, the Lakers and the Suns, you know, that was a unique series, but obviously one of the bigger ones. Jess, what do you got?
So one that came to my mind, actually, no, I'm going to go with this one because this one's better because that too that came to mind. But the one, Ron Artest in 2010 against the Suns, where he kind of just somehow came out of nowhere.
How clutch was that? How clutch was that?
I have my best friend is a Suns fan, and he still doesn't understand that. He's like, how does Ron Artest get there?
How does he get there, and how do you bank it in? How does he get banked in? Oh. And by the way, that was – Nash was on Steven Jackson, you know, All the Smoke, and he talks about that. He's like, man, that was one of those moments where they felt like they had a legitimate chance against the Lakers, and then out of nowhere, Meta tips that one in, or Meta throws that one in.
I love that.
Okay, so one I'm going to go with is, and I know it's not right at the buzzer, but the Magic Skyhook against the Boston Celtics helps the Lakers win in the Garden. That's, you know, obviously one of the best ones as well. A couple other, Brian Bird says the Fisher Point 4, Ori, Kobe in 2006. Those are my top three I have in my lifetime. K Fury 21 has a list, Ori, Kobe versus Phoenix, and Fisher versus the Spurs. Sliwa Show. Rest of the week, obviously Wednesday through Friday. So as always, we greatly appreciate you guys tuning in. Thank you to Jesse. Thank you to Curtis. Thank you to everybody that listened to the show. LA, have a great rest of your night.